You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by John Brazier, and we are recording this from the Philadelphia Cricket Club, right, John? It's the annual Phillies sponsorship golf outing, one of the highlights of the year. It's great. It kind of culminates the whole alumni weekend. We've had a great weekend, John, seeing all our old friends and some Phillies greats, some Hall of Famers, and speaking of which, Jim Cott joins us today. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
And Jim, you threw out the first pitch on, you kicked off opening or alumni weekend by throwing out the first pitch on Friday night. How was that?
That was fun. You know, they were so nice, the Phillies, to do that. Debbie Nacido called me last year, and they were going to honor me after my Hall of Fame induction. And my wife Margie and I each had a little three-day bout with COVID. And then she called me this year, and I said, yeah, Deb, you don't have to. I was a very small part of the Phillies. I didn't have my best individual years there, but she wanted to do it, and it's just been a great honor, and it's been a great weekend.
Cool. Jim, I gotta say, it was great hearing you. I guess that was Friday night on the broadcast too. And you said that before. You said, "Oh, you know, you weren't happy with, I guess, your performance when you played for the Phillies." But why is it, John? John and I are the same age. Was Jim Cott one of our favorite players?
Well, yes. And also, when you look at your career, I mean, yeah. what a career as far as your playing career and then your broadcasting career. So, I mean, you have over 50 plus years as a player and broadcaster, and then obviously you get into the Hall of Fame. You've written books. You've done a million different things. One of the things I'm most impressed with is I was reading through your bio that you, and here we are in a golf course, and we're about to play in the alumni outing, and you've shot your age or better four times. If I'm not mistaken, three times left-handed, one times right-handed?
Well, now at 84, I've done it quite a few times left-handed, but this happened when I was 75 in the same week. Because I shot at 75 right-handed and left-handed, not on the same day. But when I took up the game, that's how old I am, when I took up the game in the 70s, I was in my early 30s, they didn't have left-hand equipment.
Huh.
So I just had to learn to play right-handed. And then in the 90s, the equipment came along, and so I switched, and now I play like today I've got seven left-hand clubs, seven right.
I was going to say, how do you know which way to go?
Yeah.
Can I just say, I could live to be 115 years old and not shoot my age?
Well, when they first came out of the left-handed clubs, how easy was it? I mean, what did you shoot that first round?
You know, you'd be surprised. I whiffed the ball. Because I had so much baseball swing, and there's that little ball sitting there not moving.
Right.
And, you know, I wanted to hit it out there like you do a baseball, and it was embarrassing. I had some seasoned pros that would tell my friends, you got to tell Jim not to try this. He's wasting his time. He's in his 50s. And so years later with that same guy, I think I shot like 78 or something. And I said, Ron, I'm glad I stayed with it. But yeah, it took me a while to actually find the ball, you know, on the ground in the right spot.
Right.
Well you had a long career, as John said, playing the game 25 years in the big leagues. And, you know, you were a good athlete. I remember you as a good hitting pitcher, right, Jim?
Oh, Charlie Manuel and I, we kidded on the bus out here. Charlie and I were teammates for 6 years, and Bill Rigney loved to pinch hit for the pitchers, and I'd have a one-run lead, eighth inning in the on-deck circle, and Charlie would tap me on the shoulder and say, Kitty, I'm hitting for you. I said, Charlie, will you get back in the dugout? We're trying to win this game. I got more at-bats nice. Than you do.
Nice.
Charlie right. would admit that. But, yeah, I got to pinch hit once in a while. I think as a kid, people of my era, we were baseball players that just happened to be pitchers. Because we learned to slide, we learned to bunt, we learned to run the bases.
It wasn't as specialized as it is
right,
now.
Right. Right. And then, you know, pitching, I was just talking to Kevin Gross, and he talked about what a good hitter he was, and he would have rather been a hitter, but he had such a good curveball, they made him a pitcher.
Now, again, your career started in the late 50s, right? And it carried you all the way to 1983. So back in the 50s, I was talking to Larry Christensen before the earlier today. He said one of your first batters that you faced was Ted Williams.
I faced Ted Williams toward the end of 59, yes. The first batter I actually faced, was Louis Aparicio with the White Sox, in 59 when they won the pennant. And then I got to face Williams twice the end of 59. He got hits both times, and then I did get him out in 1960. I faced him one more time, but and then got to know Ted. I spoke at the dedication of his tunnel out to the airport, so that's always a nice honor to say you faced Ted Williams.
And I know Charlie would always say that that's the hitter that he emulated, that he learned from. But talk about, I mean, it's a walking history book. I was in a car a couple of years ago, and I now do it every year, where I take Bobby Shantz out to a golf tournament. And when I was talking to Bobby, we start the conversation. We had an hour ride out to the club. And I start talking to him, and next thing you know, he starts talking about Mickey Mantle and all these different players that Tom and I just missed, watching. And it literally, I started getting like goosebumps, just by listening to him tell all these names and stories. And I know Bobby Shantz was one of your heroes, right, growing up?
Yeah, he was my boyhood idol. Yeah, right. I actually learned how to field my position by listening to the radio. Hmm. And people say, how do you do that? Well, every Sunday, I could listen to 8 games. White Sox, Cubs, Tigers, and the Braves had moved to Milwaukee. Every team played a doubleheader. Monday was off. So when the Philadelphia A's, and my dad was a big Connie Mack fan,
right,
went to Lefty Groves induction in 1947, and they would say, well, here's Bobby Shantz, best fielding pitcher in baseball, lands on the balls of his feet. He's always in position for a comebacker, ready to go left or right. I go to my backyard with a tennis ball, boom, boom, one after the other. It's probably maybe 11 or 12 then. Fast forward to when I'm 19, I go to my first spring training. We go through the pitcher's drills. And the coach said, kid, you look just like Bobby Shantz.
Wow.
And then about 4 years ago, because Bobby's 97 now, I'm 84, Rawlings Gold Glove called me, Rawlings, and said, at the Gold Glove dinner, I present the awards to the current winners. So they said, we're going to give out legacy awards. Have you ever heard of Bobby Shantz? I said, heard of him? Yeah, he's my boyhood idol. So they got a car and they took Bobby up to New York. I got some wonderful pictures of he and I. He's 5'6". I'm 6'5".
Yeah, right, quite a difference.
But he was always, when it comes up, he was my boyhood hero.
Yeah, we love Bobby. And you guys both keep yourself in great shape. I know, I can't believe Bobby's 97. I mean, he has the spry and jump in his step. And
he was golfing up until 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He had a fall and he hurt his elbow mowing the lawn.
Cutting the lawn, I know. Yeah. I know.
Did you pattern your, I know you were talking a little bit about this on the air on Friday. And I know when I played wiffle ball and I was just messing around stick ball with the friends, I'd emulate your windup.
Really?
And so, yes. And so, is that something you got from Bobby as well?
Well, the windup that you probably remember, my career had really hit
I think it was like that, Jim. I think it was like you would do this, but your foot would stay out there.
That was the slide step.
Yeah.
I was probably the first pitcher that used what they now call the slide step. And up until the 70s, there wasn't a lot of speed in the game. Aparicio in the American League, then along came Campanaris in the American League, rather. And then, of course, the National League had Brock and Morgan and Maury Wills. And so now the getting the ball to the catcher was more important. So Johnny Sain had me, he said, well, when you stand in a normal position, what's the first thing you do? You lift your leg and you go backwards. So yeah, Let's put that foot way out here and put the glove on the arm, and then you can just unload and go. So I can
get a quicker release.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was very effective. And we incorporated that with my windup into a kind of a quick pitch motion. And with Johnny, who was my most influential pitching coach, it kind of resurrected my career.
Yeah. Now, what was that when you joined the Phillies in the mid 70s? What was that like, joining the likes of?
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Lefty and all, a lot of the guys that were, ended up a lot of those guys making on the, or on that 1980 team.
You know, I really look forward to it. I was so fortunate. I'd had two really good years with the White Sox, and then Roland Heeman, the general manager, came to me and he said, you know, Mr. Allen is losing a lot of money, and you're due for a nice raise. And he said, I think we could get some young talent for you. There's three teams in the National League that are looking for veteran pitchers, the Mets, the Pirates, and the Phillies. Well, I had followed the Phillies. First of all, I was always a Philadelphia baseball fan because of my dad and the A's, and I knew the Phillies were getting better every year. I said, boy, if you could work a trade with the Phillies, that would be great, which they did. They got Dick Ruthven and Roy Thomas and Mike Buskey, and then they traded Dick to Atlanta for Ralph Garr. So Chuck Tanner had said to, I think, Paul Owens, he said, now pitch him every 4 days, every three. I come off a year of I think I started 43 games and pitched 300 innings. But Danny really was more, he wanted to match up guys. So he would say, well, I'm going to skip you against Montreal. I said, why? He said, well, they got a lot of right-hand hitters. I said, well, Danny, I've been in the league 15 years. I had to get a right-hand hitter out or two.
Right.
But I never really got into a good groove. Then when I did, then he put me into pinch run spur of the moment one day in St. Louis for Bull. And St. Louis had this loose dirt, even though they had turf, and I came around, slid into third, and I cracked my kneecap. So that kind of ended my effectiveness as a starter. But I say the 1977 team, talent-wise, was the best team. Timmy McCarver and I would talk about that all the time. You know, we just didn't quite get past the Reds or the Dodgers, but we won 100 games those first 2 years, won the division all three. Great
teams.
Well,
then Tim came back in your life as a broadcaster,
yes,
right?
Yes, he did.
Helping you and your brother. And you had a long and storied broadcasting career, and Tim was probably one of your influences.
Oh, we stayed very close. I was so honored. They're completing a documentary on me, which should be done pretty quick, and they interviewed Tim a lot, and he'd always said I was his best friend in baseball. And on a sad note, but memorable note, I was holding Timmy's hand when he passed away in Memphis on February 16th.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, we would sit on the bench and say the runner was scoring, but he trained me to look around the field what else was going on. So we'd say, hey, the hitter should have been on second now because he overthrew the cutoff man. So we'd look for things like that when I did get into broadcasting, that helped me a great deal.
I have to ask you about pace of play. I'm sure you've been asked this a lot because you were known to be a quick worker. And, well, a couple things. First of all, do you feel like it gives the pitcher the advantage when you work quick? You know, certainly now the pitchers and the hitters have to adjust this to this pace of play. But did you feel like that was an advantage? Was that one of the reasons you work quick or just –
There's no question it's an advantage. I just cringe when I hear some pitcher nowadays say, well, I don't have enough time to recover between pitches. You know, that's nonsense. But when I got together with Johnny in Chicago, I had kind of a long motion and then a little spring at the end of it, a little zip on the end of it. And I'd lost a little of that arm strength or speed. And so he said, well, we got to get you a quicker release. So finally, I said, okay, we're going to take it to the ultimate level. I said, the bases are loaded. The guys just hit a one hopper right back on me. I'm a step and throw. And I tried it in spring training, and the hitters were baffled, you know. And Brooks Robinson said, you know, I time my hitting motion by the pitcher. When he starts his, I start mine. He said, you're not giving me any timing mechanism.
Yeah.
So, that was very effective for me, and it was, you know, like a lot of things, it was just done out of desperation.
And we mentioned in the very beginning, Ted Williams. Who are some of the toughest hitters that just were either from an intimidation factor or just in general, just tough hitters against you that you faced?
Yeah, well, over a career in the most at-bats, Al Kaline was the toughest guy for me to get out. Frank Howard had his moments, and even Reggie Smith, who isn't, you know, Hall of Famer. Reggie was a great switching outfielder, and he hit me real well. So there were guys like that, but Kaline was the one game after game. Brooks Robinson had as high an average, but he didn't do the damage that Al did, because the four hitters I faced more than any in my career were Aparicio, Yastrzemski, Brooks Robinson, and Al Kaline. Yeah.
And did Greg Maddux call you when he passed you for the most gold gloves, right? Because you had 16, and then I think he ended up with 18, right? So when he
I saw him in San Diego. I was on a motorhome trip because my late wife had subsequently passed away cancer. We were on a motorhome trip all around the country. So I went out to the ballpark at San Diego and I said, Mad Dog, you're going to break my gold glove record, but I got another one for you to shoot at. I said, oldest pitcher to steal a base. I was 41 years, 7 months or whatever. Nice. So now during the summer, I get an email or a little message from their PR guy. Maddox just broke your record.
Oh, is that right? Because everyone says how competitive he is.
So I saw him. I actually presented him with an award at the New York Writers' Dinner. So I said, was that the back end of a double steal? He said, no, it was a straight steal. He said, actually, I dropped down a bunt, got on first base, and then I stole second.
Wow.
I said, okay, it's legitimate.
Wow, that is awesome.
You had mentioned Charlie Manuel before you were teammates, and John and I, he's one of our favorite guys. Did you ever face Charlie? And what kind of, you know, what kind of hitter was Charlie?
Oh, Charlie, he would always say, you know, Kitty, if I played every day, I could hit. But in those days, you didn't have a DH. We had a solid outfield.
Right.
And all Charlie would do is he'd get a chance to pinch hit once in a while. And he always likes to kind of kid me about it, is that I'd say Charlie, it was Charlie, Greg Nettles. We had three or four more extra guys. We only carried 9 pitchers in, so we had a lot of extra men. And I'd say, how many swings you got in spring training? He said, well, we got 10. I said, all right, 5 for you. And then I said, I'm not going to tell you what's coming the next 5. That's pitching practice. And I said, I want to move the ball up and in like I did on Reggie Jackson, guys. I can move them off the plate. So I said, I'm going to do that once in a while. And I'd end up hitting Charlie. Kitty had hit me on purpose.
You don't want Charlie charging you, too. No. Charlie's a big dude. No.
But then when Charlie got to over to Japan, then that was such a great move for him and a great career move. I'm happy for him.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, it's funny, and we had fantasy camp. Charlie comes down to fantasy camp every year. I had asked him a question. I said, Charlie, you know, are you fluent in Japanese? He said, I know enough to be dangerous, but not really. Well, someone then asked him a question like 2 days later in a banquet and said, Charlie, when you came up to bat, was there a song for you when you came up to bat? Next thing you know, Charlie, were you there?
I don't know if you told him about this.
Charlie, in front of 200 people, breaks into song in Japanese and sings the song.
The whole song. Sings
for 2 minutes, the whole song.
Really?
And we're all looking like dumbfounded going, wow, Charlie, like where did that come from?
That was his walk-up song.
That was his walk-up song. Exactly.
I can't imagine Charlie having walk-up.
Right. He did his own walk, right? All right. As a broadcaster, too, you've had so many great moments. Is there one particular game or moment within a game that that stands out as a broadcaster?
Well, I think I did Doc Gooden's no-hitter in 96. I did David Wells' perfect game. I actually predicted it early in the game because the Twins had nobody in the lineup except Paul Molitor. And I said to Kenny Singleton, my broadcast partner, I said, this got perfect game written all over it because he'd got the first 6-7 guys out, and that was a fun game. But I would say the most emotional and easiest game I ever had to do was Derek Jeter's last home game. So we had a dedicated camera on Derek from the time he came in the clubhouse, and I'd said to Bob Costas, this will be the easiest game because all we have to do is shut up and watch and react to what Derek did. And he was so nervous. In fact, I always talked about, and Don Zimmer had told me this, Derek was the best at this ground ball to the arm side that he could flip the pocket of his glove, and he in one motion would make that play better than anybody. Mm. And he had one early in the game, and he bobbled it. I said, that kind of indicates how nervous he was. And then, of course, the dramatic ending when it looked like the Yankees were beaten. They came back and tied it, and he got the winning hit in the 10th inning. So that was a very memorable game.
I'm not sure. Were you broadcasting in 2009 for the Yankees?
I was then doing MLB.
Oh, MLB. Okay.
Yeah, my last year with the Yankees was 2006. And then my wife and I took that motorhome trip in 2007. I was doing some blogging and stuff for the YES Network. And then when the MLB Network launched, Tony Petitti hired me and Bob Costas, and I did like a dozen games. So I was still doing, in fact, I did, I was telling Charlie today, one of the most enjoyable games was Pedro hooked up with Tim Lincecum. And Pedro gave up a home run to the first hitter and then just shut him down. And it was one of those 2-1 games and a $1.58.
Right. Yeah.
Quick announcer's dream.
Right. Well, that 09 series against the Yankees, Phillies, Yankees was tough for us because I think we thought with that 08 squad that we had some years in us, especially, you know, front office was very aggressive in free agents with Roy Halladay and Cliff Lee.
Right.
And, you know, we went for broke. So that 2009 was a disappointment. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the last time the Yankees had done what they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a guy in the, a player right now in the current game that you follow just because you like their style of play or you enjoy watching?
Well, when he's healthy, because I'm still affiliated with the Twins, Byron Buxton.
Right.
And I think I probably follow pitchers more. I like to see the guys that are off-speed lefties like I was. I like to see them do well, but I don't watch as many games. I watch very few games because it frustrates me when they take the starter out after
right.
six innings and they don't advance runners. And you know, we were sitting in spring training, Paul Molitor, Tony Oliva, Rod Carew, myself, and I said, "What are we doing here?" Because we're total strangers in terms of how they play the game
right.
today. We're just, so all I do there is I walk outside to the patio and I sign autographs for 2 hours.
right. All right, and let's talk about, too, last year you were inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, and it was a big class, right?
But,
and that must have been, talk about that. That must have been very emotional because, again, all the years you put in as a player and as a broadcaster.
Well, you know, I was on the ballot. I've been on the ballot for quite a few years and missed by one vote, two votes here and there. And so my expectations were not like Big Poppy was waiting by his phone because, you know, he obviously knew he was probably going to get in. And so I knew when I looked at the committee, they had Ozzie Smith, guys I played with and against. Schmitty was there. Fergie Jenkins was a big supporter. Joe Torre. So I looked at the makeup of the committee because that's what it comes down to. And I said, well, I got a chance. And I said, this will be the fairest hearing that I've ever had. And I know the drill. The Hall of Fame said, will you be at your phone between X hour and X hour? It used to be in the morning.
Right.
Now that they announce it on ESPN, they said, if you can be at your phone between 5:15, 5:45, we don't call with bad news. So I'm just sitting there at home with Margie, and I'm looking at golf. And even though you want to downplay it, it's on your mind, you know, the whole day. It's a stressful day. And then I think about halfway through that time period, I see my phone, and it's a 917 area code. Well, Cooperstown 607. I thought, well, I'll answer it. And the first words I hear is this Jim Cott? Yes. This is Jane Clark from the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
That's all she had to say.
Right,
your life changes just like that.
Did you get emotional on that call?
Yeah. You know, I the first thing I thought of, and I mentioned that a lot in my induction speech, was, you know, my dad, because my dad was such an avid fan. But at my age, he's not around anymore. But I thought about what my dad would think. I got that picture of him standing in front of the Hall of Fame in 1947.
Wow.
So, yeah. And then I think that's a time when you really reflect and look at how fortunate you are to have certain guys, like mine was Jack McKeon in the minor leagues. And he came to my induction. He was my playing manager. He's now 90. He's 93. I'll be 85. And he came there, but he was my minor league manager in 58. When he was 27, I was 19. If I didn't have Jack, I don't think I'd be in the big leagues because I started out the year poorly. He could tell I was a little on the edge. He called me and he said, kid, you're going to pitch in the big leagues. He said, you're pitching for me every 4 days. We only have 7 pitchers. I met you in between the little relief. So by the end of the year, I pitched 245 innings. And I really, as an aside, that's what kids miss today. They go up and down, up and down. So I got a whole year to really find out a lot about myself, about pitching. And so I started thinking about guys that, you know, influenced me, like Jack and Johnny Sain. And then since then, it's been a whirlwind in a good in a good way. Yeah, it's really been far beyond what I ever thought it would be.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
That's special, great. Special time. Well, we go to thinking just really, you know, lofty thoughts there, John, to your crazy quiz. You think you're ready for this, Jim? You probably haven't had a quiz since you were in high school.
Probably not.
All right, Jim, I'm gonna pull a Tony La Russa. I'm going to put sunglasses on. You're going to think that's, you know, but it's because I have readers in it. I didn't remember my readers. Yeah. So if you're going to walk in here saying, why is Brazier wearing sunglasses? All right, so we have eight questions, multiple choice about your life, okay? If you get 6 out of 8, Tom is best friends with a fanatic, and I'm sure you have grandkids. We're going to send some fanatic stuff to some of your grandkids.
Okay.
All right. Does that work?
Sure.
All right. First question. You went to high school in Zealand, right? Michigan?
Yes.
Which of these celebrities is not from Zealand? Okay. I'm a little liberal on the celebrity
word. Term celebrity.
Term celebrity. So,
not a hotbed of celebrities.
There's three people that I'm going to name three people that are from Zealand, one's not. Tell me who's not. All right, Ron Essink, who's former NFL tackle for the Seahawks and Cowboys, Buffalo Bills and Steelers tight end Jay Remiersma, comedian and actor Soupy Sales from Match Game, and Renee Geerlings, who's an actress in Halloween 2 and Compound Fracture. So who's not from Zealand? Is it Ron?
Soupy Sales.
Soupy Sales.
I mean, first of all, you're not going to make up those three names.
Yeah, I know Jay Reimersman.
I probably butchered his name too, didn't I?
Yeah.
I used to always do a Match Game 75. I brought it back, Tom.
You brought it back. Soupy Sales. Back
you are
quiz.
One for one. All right. You attended Hope College in Holland, Michigan. Which of these celebrities did not go to Hope College? Okay. DJ Rayburn, Major League Baseball umpire. Sufjan Stevens, I've actually heard him. He's an Academy Award nominated musician. Kim Zimmer, who's a 4-time Emmy winning actress from the soap opera Guiding Light. And then Bob Denver, who played Gilligan on Gilligan's Island.
The second one.
Sufjan Stevens, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So you think Gilligan went to Hope College?
Well, you said one of them didn't, right?
Yeah, one of them did not.
It was Gilligan.
It was Gilligan, yeah. Right.
I haven't heard the other fellas.
Sorry about that. All right. Yeah. I think you'll be fine. In 1957, your first minor league stop was, this is going to go back, you're going to have to go back in the memory time machine. 1957, your first minor league stop was Superior, Nebraska for the Superior Senators, correct? Which was not a teammate. So three were teammates on that team. One was not. Tell me who was not the teammate. Okay, Dan Stevenson, James Barbie, Robert Boyd, Robert Scalzi.
Even though it was Bob Scalzi and it was Larry Barbie, the first one you mentioned was who?
Dan Stevenson.
He wasn't.
Yes, that's our video guy. Video Dan Stevenson.
Oh, yeah, Video Dan.
I knew you knew him as Video Dan, but I threw it off by saying Dan Stevenson.
Right.
All right, now it gets a little easier. That was kind of the silly one. So you were 2 for 3. How many, I always love to know, again, you never. Some guys know their stats right, you know, to a T.
Yeah.
Some guys don't. How many career wins did you have? Do you want the multiple choice?
283.
Bang. He's got it.
I mean,
nice.
It's unbelievable. All right, 3 for 4. In 1976, who led the Phillies with 189 hits? Was it Dave Cash, Gary Maddox, Larry Bowe, or Jay Johnstone?
Dave Cash.
Dave Cash. Yes. He is on a roll, Tommy.
Yes.
I think he's pretty close to, right? He's got 4 or 5.
Yep.
All right, Steve Carlton went 20-7 in 1976. Who was second on that team with 18 wins? Was it LC, Jim Lomborg, Tom Underwood, or Randy Lurch?
Jim Lomborg.
He's one away from qualifying, right?
Yes.
All right. Your number is retired by the Twins. Which Twins player is second in career home runs behind Harmon Killebrew? So he has 293. Now, Killebrew had 559, but this Twin is second in career home runs with 293. Is it Tony Oliva, Torrey Hunter, Kent Urbeck, or Bob Allison?
I'm going to say Kent Urbeck.
Bam! He's qualified. And we can go for 7 of 8 right here. How many presidential administrations did your playing career take you through?
Seven.
Seven. Can you name them?
Eisenhower.
Yeah. Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, and Reagan. How about that?
Tremendous.
How about that?
Well, awesome. You know, you mentioned something, too. I have to bring it up. You mentioned on the broadcast, Jim, that you've been part of a lot of first ball ceremonies, you know, during the years. And now you do a cool thing. You sign that baseball, and then you give it to a fan. What's the meaning of that? I love it.
You know, we talk about a lot about growing the game and getting people interested. And I don't know, just on the spur of the moment, I said to Margie, you know, all these first pitches, I got the one I threw to Torrey Hunter. That was the 50th anniversary of our World Series game. And I actually threw that from the rubber.
Okay, nice.
But that was
a little scary.
8 years ago.
Wow.
I said, you know, and you get those balls and you give them to, I said, you know, it'd be nice. I said, I think I'll find a little boy and I'll go give the ball to him. And she said, find a little girl. So right behind the, I think one of the fellows that escorted me down, they found this little girl. And I said, you know, Booney signed it. I signed it. I said, you never know. You make a baseball fan that way. Right. You do something productive other than having it sit in a case somewhere.
Well, and one last, Jim, you mentioned what we talked about, which is still, like, I would love to be in your foursome because I want to see you hit right-handed and left-handed. You're about to go out on the course. So you have certain clubs that are right-handed and certain clubs that are left-handed. How do you divide them up?
I usually hit my longer shots left-handed.
Okay, so your driver and your three wood.
Yeah,
and
because from a golf mechanic standpoint, my left-hand swing is what they call more shallow, so I hit it better off a tee. My right-hand swing is steeper, so
your wedges and all that.
I usually find the ground better. I mean, I don't always, but that's from about 140 in, I would hit right-handed clubs.
And how about putting?
I putt. Actually, my wife was a golf pro, and then she quit because she's out fly fishing today somewhere near Harrisburg. And so she has this old putter, a little shorter putter, and she putts like a demon. And I said, she doesn't play golf anymore. I said, I'm going to start using your putter. And it's a little short Odyssey right-handed one, and I've been putting well with it. So that's the putter of the month.
And that's a right-handed or left-handed?
Right.
Right-handed.
Yeah, I'm left-eyed, so I see the line better.
Can you imagine, John? I can't golf with one side, so let alone two. But, Jim, thanks so much for joining us on our podcast. Thanks for being part of Alumni Weekend. I know the fans were thrilled to see you. I think you're one of everybody's favorites, so I just really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Really appreciate it.
Fun.
All right, good luck out there.
Good luck, and we'll sign off, John. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time on Phillies Backstage.